And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, hello. It's very nice. You know, we have very nice weather. I'm doing very nice. You know, we're still, you know, it's getting cold, though. It's getting in the 70s. Yeah, we're going to have our Christmas party, not this Saturday, but next Saturday. This Saturday is going to be the Arizona Breakfast Club. It's the first Saturday of the month. And fortunately, this month, the first Friday of the month is next week. So that means we don't have to have the magazine done and then get up a few hours later and go to Breakfast Club. So that's good. So this week we go to the Arizona Breakfast Club, and then it is, we're going to have the gun show we're going to go to later. So maybe we might find a couple of things we might need. And I'm kind of gunned up, you know, but you always need a good survivalist 22 to put in your backpack kind of thing. So that's the only thing I guess I'm really needing. Now, what we're going to do today is Neil Connor's our first guest. New Hampshire Secession is what we're going to talk about. Now, their webpage is NH, or New Hampshire, nhindependence.org. Now, in the second hour, we're going to have Cody Wilson on. He's going to give us, our fourth, fifth update on the 3D gun printing thing. He said, oh, there's some news. Oh, we're going to tell you about the news on the 3D gun printing thing. So maybe I don't need to go to the gun show. Never know. Ooh, know what I mean? Now, Tom Woods is going to be on in the third hour, and he's going to be talking about secession and nullification, and is there a difference, and why we should care, and so on. So we're going to talk about that. Plus, we're going to be talking about, you know, what's going to be happening in 2013. Dr. Paul is going to be busy. You know, we had his chief of staff, Jeff Deist, on telling us, kind of what they had planned, and that's kind of what the Breakfast Club is going to be about Saturday. We have, Young Americans for Liberty and the C4L guys, some of the Ron Paul Revolution. Everybody's going, okay, so what's the plan? And we do that because we call it Billy Jacking. You know, it's an old, movie back in the 70s. It was just kind of one of those kind of Steven Seagal things, but with Billy Jack. And there was a scene in there where he goes in the city square, Prescott. He's in there up against the sheriff in the city square, and he goes, I'm going to take the right side of my right foot. I'm going to put up against the right side of your head, and there's nothing you can do about it. And you show whack. Done. We call it Billy Jacking. We tell them exactly what we're going to do, and then we do it. The reason, and we never bluff, and the reason is because a lot of times you'll just go, don't do it. We'll be good, you know, and then the government will do whatever. Very rarely, but sometimes saves us the effort. But so we say, look, this is what we're going to do. Well, there's a lot of things we're going to do. So we're going to talk about that Saturday at the Breakfast Club. The following Friday, a week from this Friday, is the publication of December's issue of the E-Zine, which is about what are you going to be doing in 2013 to bring about, change in a loved one, a friend, a society, or what effort are you going to make? And it could be small, but do something. So this is what's keeping us busy. Now, we're going to get in with Neil Connor here. He's kind of, got a thing going on. This whole deal about New Hampshire secession is not new. And I remember hearing about this with Vermont for years, a lot of time. And all of a sudden, this is really starting to have a big uptick. Now, I know Dr. Paul wants to focus, along with Kucinich, on the Federal Reserve and war. But this secede thing keeps coming up, especially in Texas. So, you know, it's, you know, I break with thee, I break with thee, I break with thee, and you throw dog poop on their shoes. Okay? Is that how it works?
Focus on with Kucinich on the Federal Reserve and war, but this...
Whoa, I got to return on...
Especially in Texas.
Oh, you guys, so, you got to turn off your feed, man.
Hey, Ernie, can you hear me through here?
Yeah, I'm getting a repeat on my voice.
Hey, I'm sorry, I'm getting it on mine as well.
War, but so,
whoa,
I got to return on...
Here, I tell you what, let's take you off, and then Donna will call you back. Hey, Donna? Yeah, we'll get Donna to go ahead and get him done. He's doing the feed from... He's also co-host of Flaming Freedom on LRN, and what they're doing is they're using their mic, you know, to go through the Skype on this, and we're getting feedback on the from him. So let's go ahead and see if I can get Donna. I don't know what she's doing. Yeah, yell really loud. Yeah, well, maybe she's doing something else. So we'll go ahead and get Neil on here during the break. But you know, the secede thing is really starting to become a big deal. And I'm old enough at 51 to have heard this before, okay? This comes back in things like, I remember in the late 70s, early 80s, when the OPEC thing was going on and the shortage and of oil. And in Texas, they had a song. I was going to school there, and it was, "Freeze a Yankee, drive 75 and freeze them alive, freeze." And what they were saying is Texas has the ability. A lot of people don't know this. If you go to school there, man, they make sure you take this class, okay? You have to have Texas government and history and whatever. This is what they say. When Texas became part of the Union, they're called the Republic of Texas, and there's a reason. Because they were part of Mexico. Mexico invited the people to come, and you know, in the free country of Texas, and you know, Tejas, you go in there and you know, and do what you want. And then they wanted their independence from Mexico, and you know, ouch, quit it, and we don't want to. And it kind of, you know, that's what the Alamo was all about, and Sam Houston and everything, and Santa Ana and going against, and people die, and ouch, quit it, and leave us alone, whatever. Now, what happened though is to try and maintain their autonomy, they aligned with the United States, but under certain conditions. And these are a couple of conditions I remember. One, that they were a republic and that they could secede and leave whenever they wanted to. Texas just go, all right, I break with the two, and we go do our own thing. The other thing was that they could break up into five states, which would mean that they get, not like they don't have enough space, they would get, instead of two, they would get 10 senators. Oh, so that, you know, had an impact. Now, that whenever this has come up, it's always been Texas kind of leads the way. And what happened, though, is they get, you can't do that. Now, we changed our mind. Why? Well, because since you came in, we had the Civil War. And secession is not allowed. It was called, what was the case? It was called Grant versus Lee, okay? And you lose. Well, this idea that we can secede down to the individual. Hey, man, I'm all over that. You know, down to the individual. You know, I don't see the argument going that you're going to be advocating for the secession of the individual if you keep advocating for the secession of the state. And that means that you're part of the state. You're legitimizing the state. Hey, Donna, he's... I got feedback on you. Got to hang up, call him back, use a phone line. We'll get taken. Go ahead and try, and we'll get him through the break. Go ahead and talk to him now. So what we're going to do is when we get Neil back, we're going to go ahead and talk about secession of New Hampshire, where that's going, and how that jibes with secession of the individual. Can we go down to the individual? Should we be talking about the individual? This is a step towards the individual. This is understanding of the individual. Well, I asked the guys in Tahrir Square. They already did the secession thing. We don't need another pharaoh. And then they got another one. Approved by the State Department, of course.
Quantum vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed. With brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system. On a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com from Big Head Press.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello. Now, one thing I want to make sure that we're talking about is the purpose of doing secession is to get away from what? Let's ask Neil. We want to secede from, you know, at least give the states the opportunity to say, you know, never mind. What are we seceding from?
Well, we're seceding from a federal government that has gone way beyond the role originally set out for it for the Constitution.
And you're going to go hide under the skirts of a local government? That's good.
I can understand. I'm with you in terms of philosophy. The role of the organization, however, is just to educate people on how the state would be better off out from under the yoke of the federal government. And once we get that conversation started, then people will, you know, secession is not a polite topic of conversation, certainly not around the dinner table. But we want to get that conversation started so that people can start thinking about, well, how do I get out from under the yoke of the state government? How do
you know, it's a non-starter for me, Neil, when it gets down to any kind of principle discussion. I mean, you're talking a practical version. Well, we want to get out from under the federal government because fill in the blank. I mean, they spend too much money. They keep indebting the future generations. They're never going to be able to this. They're always doing that. They're not, you know, there to protect against a blah, blah, blah. All the promises they made, they lie, yada, yada, yada. But we're going to go ahead and run underneath the protective arm of this government. And I'm just, you know, there is no, I mean, if you're not sanctioning it as a concept, like you're saying, education or getting down to the understanding of the sovereignty of the individual, then the whole argument's lost on me.
I can understand that. And that is a role of philosophy and the philosophy of government. And, you know, as someone who moved to New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project, I have my own both political and philosophical issues that I try to spread every day. You know, I am for sovereignty of the individual. I am for the independence of the individual. But I think that in our efforts here with the Foundation for New Hampshire Independence, we just want to provide a resource, a way that people can point to, hey, look at all the ways that the federal government is violating the individual rights of people who reside within New Hampshire, and how can we reduce that harm? And a lot of people are not yet disillusioned with the federal government or with government in general. They still believe, you know, they'll salute the flag. It's a great team to root for. But when it comes down to it, the federal government is perpetrating pretty much the most harm to the individual, and as you said, indebting the future generation. If we can reduce that harm and get people to start talking about and be responsive in their local politics, then I think we can really advance the prospects for liberty.
Well, give me this argument. I mean, you know, I would argue that New Hampshire needs to be free because, and how we would do it, and splitting up the spoils of, and who gets, you know, the deed to. And I mean, you know, you got to start. If you're going to go practical, you got to start answering practical questions.
Sure. Yeah, and that comes up all the time. There are lots of objections, and we've just started the dialogue. We launched about a week ago or so, and we've gotten a lot of press and a lot of critical questions because now people are really thinking about it. It's in the mainstream. So what's the practical side of it? Well, you know, a lot of people have asked, well, isn't the federal government going to come in with tanks and fighter jets? And we saw how probably the worst nation in the history of the world, the Soviet Union, allowed its satellite republics to go peacefully, to separate peacefully. So as far as the practical element of it, we really don't have to do too much different than what we're doing in New Hampshire right now. New Hampshire tax dollars are going to the federal government and not coming back to the state. We've been in the top five donor states for the past 30 years. So if we just kept that money in New Hampshire and the individual politics of New Hampshireites are going to be up to them. We don't take internal positions on what we would like to see legislation be.
I tell you I apologize. Go ahead and finish your thought.
Oh, no worries. But if we just stop the drain of our resources and money to Washington, then we're going to be more prosperous and better off.
Okay, so that's one of the, if you're looking for the money, the money is, there's more going to Washington than they're redistributing back, in your opinion, or by what you say, but there's an enormous amount of federal government spending. I mean, way above whatever revenue you give them. And, it's like half of the money that's spent by the government, they don't even collect. So I'm going, to think that it's not going to economically impact the states is not really understand what they're doing. But, not that I care. I'm like, stop the spending. I'm just soon you not, and we'll get back to a real economy. And what's the economy that New Hampshire would rely on?
Well, yes, there's lots of free money being distributed by Washington. As you probably remember the commercials on TV, there's this guy in a question suit just bragging about all the free money that you can get from Washington. And that's printed. That's all based on debt. So eventually that comes crashing down. And in effect, as we've seen with the recession, New Hampshire's a little bit better off than a lot of states, but it's hit hard. So even though there's lots of free money and subsidies given out by the government, it comes back to affect us. What I'd like to see if New Hampshire were independent is to see competing currencies, and so that we aren't relying on this Federal Reserve dollar, that as much free money as they give out, all the savings of New Hampshire citizens are being depleted just by inflation. And that's a silent tax that a lot of people just don't factor into.
Oh, good point. Good point. Okay. Now, this is one thing, I don't know if you've heard me talk about this, but, excuse me. What happened was, I made a big deal out of this, because, it really shocked me. One, that I went to my three-year-old granddaughter's grandparents' day of her, preschool thing. And one of the things they're all proud of, and we do this, and we do that, and everybody comes around, and we sit and get, the toys, and say your name, and ABC, whatever. But it's time for the Pledge of Allegiance, okay? Yeah. I pledge allegiance. This is not a form of brainwashing, okay? So I'm like, wow, but what the thing that kind of surprised me more than that, because I knew that was on the itinerary, I make a big deal as grandpa to my son and daughter-in-law, I just go pledging 3 years old, seriously, and then I just kind of leave it at that, and we all kind of, smile at ourselves. But it was when they started doing it, all the other, couple dozen grandparents, boom, leapt to their feet. It was like a Nazi parade. If they had little flags, they'd been waving it, and pledge, Sieg Heil. That is what you're coming up against when you're doing any kind of secession thing. And I see it as a generational thing. So when you started this, I'm wanting to know, what was the age break? Where was, the older people? Were they starting to come around? Are they the ones that are, the first to condemn you for even doing the blasphemous, you should go to Gitmo? Or are they kind of, I'm seeing this as a patriotic thing. Are the youth embracing it? When we come back, Neil Connor is going to answer these important questions.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Let me tell you how easy that is. You ready? Here we go. I declare my independence. See how easy it was? And you don't need a government form. And you don't ask permission. And you don't do conditions. And you don't explain. You're just, I own myself. And this is one thing that I think is, here it is. You know, this is Bad Narek's book. He sent me a galley copy to review and so on. Secret to Sovereignty, or How to Survive the Second American Revolution. Bad Narek, and this whole thing, his whole point is, it's kind of, you know, telling the story and so on, but it came down to one thing. As you start to learn the truth, you start to question your allegiance or obligation to any kind of a collective whatever, and you declare yourself sovereign up here, you know, between the ears. And this is, if you're not making that argument, you're just making their argument. So when you ask for state sovereignty, are you defending the state? Well, you know, and what are you going to defend? You know, how are you defending that? How do you make the argument? How do you go to the next step? Because they love to get you in, you know, a conflict. You know, they love to find that little crack or wedge in your argument and then beat the crap out of it. And you know who they are? The MKers. Americans. MKers. America. It's all America, right around America. Now, you know, I need Neil to explain to me when you go up and get, because you're going to get press, you're going to get notoriety, you're going to get a forum, you're going to get up on stage, you're going to be an artist, you're going to be on television, you're going to be up there making these arguments, and you got to explain to me what you're going to explain to Grandpa when he says you just might as well join Hamas.
I totally see what you're saying there. It's the worship of the United States and the Pledge of Allegiance, as you were citing earlier before the break, is. They're trappings of religion. It is the religion of statism. And I'm there with you in terms of philosophy. I do have to say, the foundation has a limited role. It's educational. And the task of spreading the philosophy of liberty, as I try to do in my personal life all the time, is the role of people who are within New Hampshire or where they are at. I moved to New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project to do just that. And this is just one part and parcel. The foundation itself is a resource, and we want it to be a resource for all the arguments of why New Hampshire is better off on its own. But in my personal life, I do try to combat that all the time, and I think it's all of our responsibilities. I'll give you an example. I was at a city council meeting. I was there to testify on a recent event, and there were a lot of us, liberty lovers there, who did not stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. And so when I went up there, I made sure, and we got looks from, you said it's a generational thing. It very much is a generational thing. People will snap their boots and they'll raise their hand. And if you've seen pictures of the original salute to the flag, it was the Roman salute. It was what the National Socialists used in Germany. So, I mean, you can just see how much of state worship it is. I just try to explain my permission that I'm not, my position that I'm not a pledging blind allegiance to the actions that I'm not responsible for in a state. So we want to get the dialogue going, but it's we've got knee-jerk reactions. You know, are you going to create your own flag? We're going to replace the Constitution or replace the national anthem? We don't have to. If you ascribe to the idea that, you know, you're an American, you're a patriotic American, well, that's almost entirely divorced from the concept of the United States. It's why we have the term American. It means something. It means someone who believes in individual liberty. It means someone who believes that the smallest minority is the individual, and we have to preserve individual rights. It's a heritage that, even if New Hampshire were independent, we'll ascribe to. We're one of the original 13 colonies. It's in our history to declare our independence from an overbearing crown. And it worked out well for a while. And I'm with you in terms of getting it down to the individual.
Well, the reason...
We don't have to give up our American heritage, even if we're independent.
The reason I emphasize that so much is because I already know where it goes. You know, we've had this conversation before. In 1994, I filed an initiative, and it's called Arizona's Declaration of Independence. And all I did is filed it with the Secretary of State. You know, we're going to get petitioned, and it freaked them out. Now, keep in mind, this is like almost 20 years ago. And when we filed it, it was just a Declaration of Independence. And where it referenced King George, it said federal government. And where it said these colonies, it was Arizona. And they all applied. You know, if you read that and you're going, damn, you know, and it was a philosophical thing. So that was not, and it didn't say what kind of government you're going to create. It just told you the Declaration. That's why this show is Declare Your Independence, because it tells you how to discover when they're bad, when they are destructive of these ends, okay? When they violate individual, when they do, you know, boom, done. Now, the thing is that if you don't apply that to New Hampshire, you know, then you're not being, you know, consistent. So my thing is that I'm going, okay, I understand it's educational. I understand how it can be used as a segue into, you know, larger principles. I understand. But if you're not ready for that, sooner or later, you start to fall into Steiger's Law, which goes like this. Whenever you create an organization, a movement, a structure around an issue or a cause, sooner or later, the structure becomes more important than the reason you created it. And if you got to be very clear on what is the reason you create it. So I'm going, okay, the reason is what? Is it for New Hampshire to secede? Is it to educate on other things? Is it to bring about the discussion of sovereignty of the individual? Is it about, I mean, you know, what is the goal? So explain to me, you know, is the goal really secession of New Hampshire? I mean, is that preferential to the way it is now? Probably, you know, but I mean, what is your core goal? What is your mission? Why are you doing this?
We have a very delineated role with the foundation. And that role is to educate the citizens of New Hampshire on the benefits of peacefully declaring their independence from the federal government. And if they want to take, and by starting that conversation, by starting that discussion, it gets into the mind that, yes, this is a principle. This is a right. We want to educate people on the right of declaring your independence from a overbearing government. It doesn't matter what government that is. The fact that you have the right to do that applies all the way down. It applies to the state. It applies to the county.
There you go.
This is a principle of self-determination.
Yeah, and I'm glad to hear that, because I'm telling you, I'm old enough to have been through this before. Heck, we did this 20 years ago. And I'll tell you, what saved our ass was the, you know, Declaration of Independence. Hey, I didn't change anything, you know, other than the words, you know, who from and for who. I mean, you know, the same thing applied. But if you start getting it as opposed to being a Declaration of Independence for the individual and individual rights, and you start doing it as a state, well, you just walked right into the nest. You just opened up. You know, you're not going to get past the first 5 minutes in a forum before some ex-Marine gets up wearing his USS, you know, Missouri whatever hat and saying, yeah, well, then how come in this and you're not and we need and you already capitulated on the issue of and yada, 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 yada. So yep. Now as you know, unveil this to generations coming up, as you unveil this and you have, you know, the definite schism between, you know, who got indoctrinated more and who grew up with the internet and got to ask questions, get real answers. You know, what is your most effective weapon in dealing with? Or have you really got into a lot of the debates yet? Have you had a forum? Have you got a lot of conflict?
Well, we just launched a couple of weeks ago, but already we're getting a lot of buzz. We've been interviewed on NPR and local papers. You know, your show, we're grateful for the exposure, but we're just getting the conversation starting. But this has been in the works since earlier this year. A lot of people point to, well, it's as a result of the presidential election. This has nothing to do with who's in power. This is a conversation that needs to happen. And so in pursuit of that, we want to hold forums. We want to get out there, you know, whether it's a farmer's market and passing out brochures or being at the St. Anselm Institute of Politics.
Okay, and I want to help. And we'll be back in the last segment here. You know, what can we do? I want to help, but I don't want to help enslave people just with a different master. You know, so let's make sure, you know, what we're doing here, we want to get involved with and see what we can do to help. We'll be right back.
Before I became a customer of Liberty Coin and Precious Metals, I called one of the internet companies that sells gold. I didn't like the impersonal hard sell or the fact they were in another state. Liberty's different. I could walk in their store, look them in the eye, see, feel, and walk out with what I'd bought. No hidden fees, no hard sell, no mystery, just great prices. And Liberty's one of the biggest gold sellers in the Southwest. Their experts took the time to get to know me and my investment needs. There's so many reasons I'm now a Liberty Coin and Precious Metals customer, but the most important is I trust Liberty. Remember, they're right here in Scottsdale. So drop in or call Liberty Coin and Precious Metals, 877-888-8052. That's 877-888-8052. Or on the web at libertycpm.com.
Liberty.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
From what?
I want to break free from your lies.
Yep. The government be liar, pants on fire. Okay, well, which government? Is it just government in general or what? I mean, you know, is there such thing as a good, we need whatever. All right, now this is the thing. Here we have a press release, you know, nonprofit launched to promote New Hampshire separation from U.S. government. And we have the treasurer of this organization, Neil Connor. Now, it's NH for New Hampshire, NHIndependence.org. So right off the bat, I mean, if I play grumpy old man, ex-Marine kind of, going on flag waving guy, and I'm just going, you're just not American enough, okay? And so I got to ask, this nonprofit, was it filed with the IRS?
It is, and I recognize the irony in that. There's certain things that certain advantages that we get with that. Certainly, we don't want to see New Hampshire tax dollars or the money of New Hampshire citizens going towards a federal government that they disagree with. And so, in that way, if someone wants to contribute to us, then they can prevent through tax deductible donations. If they're paying taxes to the feds, they can prevent some of that money that would otherwise go to them to the federal government, and it can come to us instead. And there are a lot of corporations out there that also do matching donations. So we get people more bang for their buck. We keep it out of the hands of the federal government. And as a organization who is strictly educational, we don't put our organization on the line for certain causes or legislation or politicians. That's something we've restricted ourselves to. And so, yes, there are some restrictions with the 501c3, but that's something that we wanted to abide to either way.
This is kind of becoming a theme now. The Porcupine, the Free State Project has gone 501. You guys doing the 501, is this like a trend? And you guys...
there are certain advantages to it, but I'm not going to recognize necessarily the legitimacy of it. Unfortunately, in this climate, we have to do certain things in order to make the most of our.
Okay, I understand the practical argument. Let me tell you why I'm so concerned about every one of these issues is because you are going to be the standard bearer in minds of many people coming out of New Hampshire, and what you're doing is going to be a template, for others. In fact, I was encouraged to have you on by people that are, they're all over the country. They're like, oh, you got to get Neil, let's go give him what for. Because they're looking at their state, Arizona, Montana, Wyoming, Washington State. I mean, it goes on and on and on, Texas. And they're going, how New Hampshire goes, we'll just keep an eye over on there. And I'm going, this is how you do this is going to have a much greater impact on this entire movement than you probably realize. And if it can have a chink in its armor, and the other guy, they will use the exact, they'll use the argument bringing up New Hampshire. Well, they did this and they did that and they're advocating for whatever. You're going to be an advantage, an asset, a blazer of the trail for the rest of these people, or you're going to be a hurdle. Now, I just want to make sure that, what we're advocating here is that, using the IRS tax deduct this kind of whatever and from one state to another, that we keep it back to the Declaration of Independence, understanding that it's the individual. And all this other stuff is there to support the rights of the individual, not their right to secede and then they get to be my new massa.
Of course. And I would love to be the standard bearer for a lot of organizations around the country. Obviously, I'm not going to say our model is right for them. They can pursue independence however they wish. We don't have any ties to any other organizations, but we want to put a professional, polished face on the movement for independence. We want to have a tone that is conversational. We want to have a tone that engages people. We don't want to be vitriolic, but we want to also assert the rights of the individual. And what we go to highlight on our website and with all the stories that we cover are how specifically the federal government is violating individual rights and not even being beholden to their own law that supposedly gives them legitimacy. That is the Constitution. And I'm with you. I don't want to be subject anymore to a state government that is out of control any more than a federal government. But there is a different climate in New Hampshire. About, I think, 42%, I believe, of New Hampshire voters are undeclared. So they're not part of the Republican Party. They're not part of the Democratic Party. They're very independently minded up here. And we have a tradition of liberty and independence in New Hampshire. It is the live free or die state. That is our motto from General John Stark, live free or die, for death is not the worst of evils. That sounds a little violent there, but we're a very peaceful organization. One thing I do want to highlight is in the Bill of Rights of the New Hampshire Constitution, the NH Constitution starts right out with the Bill of Rights. Now, Article 10 is titled the Right of Revolution. And the New Hampshire Constitution is the only constitution in the world that guarantees the right of revolution. If I may read from it real quick, it says, whenever the ends of government are perverted and public liberty manifestly endangered and all other means of redress are ineffectual, the people may and of right ought to reform the old or establish a new government. The doctrine of non-resistance against arbitrary power and oppression is absurd, slavish, and destructive of the good and happiness of mankind. So that is the core of what we're saying right here. We have become slaves to the federal government, and we want to break these chains off. And this principle applies to you as an individual, not necessarily just us as a state.
You know, I understand. I tell you a quick story. When it was like 07, I remember it was just a revolution just started getting going. Lauren Canario was am I getting it right? Canario?
Lauren Canario, yeah.
Yeah, Lauren Canario. She was part of the Kilo 7 and so on. She moves to New Hampshire, and she gets stopped. And once they going to arrest her, don't want to play or whatever, she just goes limp, and she'll sit in jail for months. She doesn't care. She's like, hey, I'm not playing. I'm not giving name. I'm not helping. I'm not whatever. Finally, they got her to agree to go ahead and actually, walk before the judge under the condition that her lawyer got to make that argument that, look, we have the right to rebellion. What do you want it to be? You want her to get a gun? All she wants to do is just sit down. I'm not playing. I'm resisting and cooperating with, and kind of goes, there it is. There's the most peaceful mechanism, the most peaceful example, the most peaceful opportunity for someone rebelling against the state. And either you support this or you leave violent revolution as the only viable option. And I'm going, ooh, that was good. So they go to the state, they make this, they go, time served, whatever, leave. But the point was, is I'm going, and I was on my way. We went to New Hampshire at the time. I was going because of her. I'm going, ooh, I want to go cover this, I'm going to have some fun. She got out before I got there. But I tell you, I understood that argument. And who did they make it to? The state of New Hampshire. Who is being the oppressive one? The state of New Hampshire. Whose constitution says that? The state of New Hampshire. So I can, heck, I live in Arizona and I already know that example, okay? So I understand, and I can see, the foundation for New Hampshire independence, we're gearing up and doing, and so you're going to be an example to the rest of the nation. It's going to be a good example or a bad one. That is up to you. I already see kind of this, foundational going, doing, getting the right checkoffs and permission slips and pieces of paper from government kind of crap. And it's going to be interesting to see how you make this transition. So we're paying attention and we want to help. But how should people be able to help? What is it you need them to do? And of course, raise money to do what? I mean, why am I giving you money? Well, what are you going to do with it?
Well, first and foremost, we're going to use it to educate the citizens of New Hampshire about how the federal government is oppressing their individual rights and how we as individuals can declare our independence. I mean, the title of your show is very appropriate to our organization. So we just want to get out there. If your donations come to us, we will use it in the most effective means. We are not a not-for-profit. It's not going to our personal benefit, but we just get the conversation started, and it's a conversation that you need to have.
Okay, I go to nhindependence.org, and where is the donation button?
On the right-hand side, we accept PayPal, we accept other means, and you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/nhindependence.
Okay, throw a couple bucks. See what, you know, hey, one less thing we got to do. Somebody's doing it. Somebody's bringing it up. But I'll tell you, you know, we'll support and go, and let's go kick ass and let them have a say. And these are good guys. We know who they are. We know Neil Connor, you know, is one of the co-hosts of Flaming Freedom over at LRN.FM. We know that he's in New Hampshire, a free stater. You know, who else is going to do it? And then we'll keep track.
I appreciate it, Ernie.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
All right, let me tell you who loves my next guest. Now, aside me. Okay, Cody Wilson, Defense Distributed, Wiki Weapons. Okay, this, you know, printable 3D, making, you know, guns go boom. You know, then what? You know, how do you still, ooh, here we go. You know, let me tell you who loves them. Popular Science, Wired Magazine, Business, I mean, I see they keep your story permanently up on their front pages. You must be a bunch of traffic for them. I mean, you know, how much press have you been getting over the last month, Cody?
Oh, man. You know, it was a lot. But then, over the last 24 hours, it was like, you know, three times as much. So, you know, just when you think it's a lot, you get even more.
Why?
I didn't even think we had a news forum a couple of days ago. But, you know, every time you got it, the barest thing, they're like, oh, my God, you know, they're this close. You know, they're 2 weeks away. And everyone starts freaking out, you know.
Well, get updated. We've had you on a few times as we've walked through this. It's been interesting. You come up with the idea. You just kind of put it out there on a YouTube on a Indiegogo crowdsourcing funding kind of thing. And you said, you know what? We can make a file that you can download, 3D printer, and you could just print gun parts. And then you put a gun together, and then you can shoot it. And then, you know, all your laws don't mean nothing. And you start doing that, and they went, oh, you're so not allowed. Why? Cuz. So now you get to the point to where the printer that you are using, the company goes, no, we want it back. And you go, really? Then we find out later, we did some research and found out that that very company is already working with other gun manufacturers to do what you're talking about. And they didn't want you as competition. So then you got the BATF. They want to, you know, have a visit with you. So you got that, have that conversation, and you keep moving the ball forward. You raise the money. You're up over at least $40,000-$50,000 from last I checked. So you're ready to go. We're going. So from that, get us up to speed here. Since that time, you found a printer. You found the law. You've done the application. Go ahead and talk to us about from the time that they took the original printer away from you.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. It seems every month there's some new obstacle where someone thinks they can finally, you know, make a stop. But of course, what people don't realize, and I think what makes this an interesting story, is that we're not interested in stopping. You know, it's just a matter of, like, how can we solve the problem? So after they took the printer away, I mean, immediately I was looking for new printers just to rent. I figured, well, okay, you know, we'll rent another one. I didn't think we'd get much press or anything, but Robert Beckhuizen from Wired thought it was an interesting story. And of course, bam, 2 weeks after that, or for the next 2 weeks, we were everywhere. We even made it, you know, under the cover of the New York Times, or at least the business section of the New York Times. And, man, I got taken for a ride on that one. Wow. You know, that was intense. People were offering us printers, everything. And so really from that moment onward, we were kind of in the driver's seat. So I found two companies, in Texas, and one right outside of San Antonio, one in Austin, one to help us print, one to help us test. We got more money, you know, we got more press. I hooked up with a lawyer in Seattle, one of the best National Firearms Act lawyers in the country, still helping me, still going to take me out to see the NFA guys with the ATF. You know, we got all the logistics and everything kind of fell into place. And this is of course after they take our printer away. It's what on the internet they call the Streisand effect. I mean, when they try to stop you, that's when everyone's becomes very interested in helping you. You know,
especially with a good idea like this. I mean, because it's more than. I mean, I like the names Defense Distributed. Wiki Weapon. I mean, you know, I'm like, you know, this is. I tell you one thing that you're going to be looking at is once you create these files, which you probably already have some files, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Quite a few now.
You know, once you do that, well, then you need to distribute them. I mean, you're just putting it on your web page, or they files that we can. You know, I can have hot links that, you know, are files, and just download the actual file and put it on Freedom's Phoenix and say, here, come get us. I'd like to be part of.
Yeah, there's, you know, we've already got some files on our site, and then you can get some through our mobile application. But, right, we're playing something a bit more complicated. So, you know, putting seeds out there, little BitTorrent files and stuff. But then there's private parties who volunteered from all over the world to use what are called seed boxes, just these private servers in different locations around the world, just dedicated to file sharing. We're looking for something that's just kind of irrevocable, right? So eventually the files are in just so many places online, you know, that...
You know, I tell you what this brings up, you know, and you've demonstrated this, you know, clearly, is that a libertarian concept. It was the way it was explained to me when I first became all aware in the late 80s, early 90s, is that libertarians never have a law against the possession of anything. Possession is not a crime. I don't care how vile it may be evidence of a crime. It may have been a crime to get it, but the actual possession of something is not a crime. And what happens is, I mean, unless it's stolen from someone, you know, but when you have a legitimately acquired piece of information, and in your case, just ones and zeros. Now, once you have, you break that concept that possession of something is a crime, then anything can be a crime. And the mere possession of ones and zeros, and that's what you're showing, is that they're going to try, it's a thought crime. You know, just the fact that you even have information is a crime. And I'm going, man, that very concept right there, you're exposing all over the place. And I'm wondering, what is the government's position on what you're doing?
Yeah, yeah. I think right now it's indeterminate and really just a speech thing. You know, is I've heard a law professor from Texas would say, well, no, you know, no federal court's going to let the First Amendment protect someone from having a file that could become a gun. Well, that's his opinion. I see a very clear, you know, relationship.
Okay, who said this?
Well, his name is Sanford Levinson. He's a very respectable professor, especially when it comes to the Second Amendment. I mean, I trust his opinion and his expertise. You know, the political reality might be that even though we can create a pretty compelling argument that the First Amendment protects our actions, some judge probably wouldn't see it that way, you know, especially a federal appeals court.
Yeah, and
judge.
How much is it going to matter?
Well, that's the thing, though. You know, you've got the law, but then you've got the people that enforce the law. And so, you know, it's just, what's the political reality? And this is the kind of bitter cynicism or realism of it all. Like, you know, who just depends on who's looking at the law and you know, I don't want to ever be before like the Ninth Circuit, you know, and see what their opinion of this is.
Yeah,
but,
you know, none of that matters, Cody. I mean, it doesn't matter once you get, you know, ones and zeros out there. I mean, heck, they do everything they can to try and stop you from downloading Spider-Man. I mean, how's that working out?
I agree. Listen, you know, we're the ones kind of leading charge here. We're the ones saying, look, you know, hey, yeah, say whatever you want. But I mean, I'm just telling you, what's the kind of political reality of the situation? You know, it's somewhat mixed. You said, what's the government's opinion? Well, you know, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. What I'm trying to say is it's based on just any given opinion, you know, from any given man.
Well, I want to know your opinion when we come back about how much it matters, you know, because of course they're going to have an opinion. They're going to do whatever they can to stop. The special interests in the industry are definitely concerned, I guarantee it. You know, heck, you know, a Glock is a whole bunch of plastic to begin with, you know, so I'm going, what happens when you get to, you know, print out all your guns? And all you do is buy some metal parts and an aftermarket, do somebody designed a brand new, I don't like that one, I'll melt it down, just do another one kind of thing. I mean, this is going to change manufacturing in every respect. Okay, one thing I want to go on when we get back is, have you been approached by any manufacturers or distributors or wholesalers or something that go, oh, because you got a big name for yourself. You got the first weapon. They're like, hey, man, you know, we can go to MakerBot and over whatever and just make it.
Oh, and remind me to tell you that we're pending 501c3 and all that.
That you're what?
Oh, that we're pending nonprofit, like contributions are now like tax deductible.
Yeah,
I think it's an important point. I think
it's also limiting. You know, we had the guest before you is a NewHampshireIndependence.org, a bunch of free state guys up there doing that, and they went 501c3. And I'm going,
how did they?
Yeah, I just thought it ironic that they're, you know, looking for tax exemption from the federal government that they want to separate from. You know. So,
No. I hear you, man. I hear you.
So this is, I mean, you're in a little bit different situation, but still. So I'm pending. I mean, I'm wondering what excuse they would use to say no.
I don't know. I really think we kind of got them here for charitable and literary reasons.
Oh, you got them. You got them right up until the three-year-old knocks all the pieces on the floor and shoots you, you know? Yeah. So I'll bring that up. You know, I always say that it's a good description of what you're up against.
I mean, you're right. That's people love to go to that one, but I think we've got the pat answer. I mean, well, and it doesn't matter, right? No one in either party of right the dialectic doesn't really care what the answer is. They're just interested in painting us as kind of unreasonable.
Well, have you talked to the BATF, other than the time that you met with them as an attorney, have they, you know, given an opinion? Well, you gotta, you must, and forms to fill out?
I talked a couple of days after the first time I met with them, the local guys, and they were just kind of giving me their assurance that, hey, you know, like, I'm not going to let the feds come get you, man. Like, you know, we're not bad people, and just this kind of stuff, you know. Somewhat reassuring, but no, I haven't talked to them beyond that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is, because I know the Obama administration, they're definitely, you know, in this UN thing. I mean, you just make all their bullshit just go away.
Well, you'd want that, yeah. Yeah, right, that small arms treaty, that's back on. God, when I saw that, I was like, wow, you know, not a moment to lose.
Well, this is the machine to give you the quality that you need of a firearm. Functional firearm is how much? How much is that machine?
Man, that machine may not exist. That just depends. I can't say yet because we haven't tested enough stuff, you know.
So, well, there's been somebody doing some testing of something, haven't they?
Yeah. They've done, like, AR lowers and other things. But, you know, those parts don't take a lot of stress. So,
What's the stress part you're looking at? You know, the bolt or something? I mean, how much are you going to try and print?
No, the bolt thrust won't be that bad. But, I mean, the main thing is, like, you know, our goal is, like, how much can be printed? Can the whole thing be printed? So we're even looking at printed sheathed barrels and chambers, you know. I mean, like, no metal, if possible.
Well, it'll work once.
Well, I mean, that's what we hope, yeah. So the pressure is really determined on, you know, I mean, the different rounds that you use.
They were coming back. You can tell me all about it. Here we go.
Yeah.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Some of the questions that I have right off the top. We're back on with Cody Wilson, DefenseDistributed.com, and he's playing chess with the three-year-old government, okay? He had a little three-year-old, and he's like, you know, and we're going to play a game, and so let's all sit down, and we'll be professional, and we'll put the chessboard in front of us, and we'll move pieces, and we'll have this discussion, and we'll hit our clock thing, and it'll be covered, and we'll go and follow the rules. Right up until the three-year-old stands up on his chair, knocks all the pieces on the floor, pulls out a 45, and puts three in your chest, okay? That's how they roll. They don't get what they want. They're like, outsquitted, and all of a sudden, bang. So now we've gone through the early stages of this. Cody has had his meeting with the ATF, and they said what to you?
They said, well, I couldn't say anything, really. They said, well, you know, wow, it sounds like you're doing X, and it sounds like you're doing Y, and all the kinds of things that really strike fear in your heart, because you realize, wow, I'm kind of all on my own here. There are no easy answers. That's what really ultimately determined for us that we needed to get a license.
So they said, okay, well, you know, as long as you get your government permission slip, we'll leave you alone. And what slip is that?
Well, it's mostly that. They say, well, it sounds like you need to go ahead and get your FFL and then get which is a federal firearms license to manufacture. And then they said, beyond that, you need to get what's called an SOT tax stamp, which allows you to make what are called the National Firearms Act regulated firearms, like short barrel rifles, short barrel shotguns, and what are called any other weapon, which is this regulatory catch-all that Congress created. Basically, I think wiki weapons would probably fit in there, because if a gun doesn't match any other definition on the books, it becomes any other weapon, a very regulated category of weapons.
Yeah, no, we were talking about this years ago when we were thinking about rail guns. I mean, heck, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress was written by Heinlein, I think, in the 60s, and it had a rail gun. So this isn't, like, new technology. Now they got them on cruisers and battleships or whatever. But, you know, what happens when you get a capacitor enough charge battery hip, it's a 15-shot rail gun? Does that apply? I mean, is that...
Well, we've actually been studying directed energy weapons and rail concepts and stuff. And of that, I'm not sure that meets traditional definitions of a firearm, where it's usually...
Yeah, it does. It's called other weapon.
Well, no. Usually firearms are described as a gun that can shoot something, shoot an explosive projectile, like a projectile by means of explosive force. Or
executive order, stroke of a pen, changed our mind, judge says.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
see, this is where you're...
They have to.
Well, this is where you're different. It doesn't matter what they say. It's a 12-year-old being able to, you know, print out whatever because I got a file BitTorrented out of New Zealand. I mean, you know, there's nothing they can do about it.
I'm not endorsing, right, that 5-year-olds print out the gun, but exactly, you've got the point. You, through the decentralist kind of concept, you break through any kind of centralist regime. And you've recently seen in the news how the UN wants to regulate the internet and everything. I mean, does it even matter then? No, I'm saying it doesn't. We really want to break through these kinds of moments where even private dark nets would be able to supply, you know, an infinite amount of reproducible firearms. I mean, we're approaching a moment, and let's say the machines aren't there now, but maybe they are. Really, there's no going back, and it becomes more and more, just like absurd to try to regulate things like this.
They're doing metal with lasers now. Metal powder, they're doing this. It's metal. You know, you take a metal and you melt it with the laser and you got metal. I mean, you know, seriously, you don't even have to deal with the plastic anymore. You're at the point now. I've seen where they 3D print bearings with the races, and the bearings move, and it comes out done in color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going, this is so, I mean, what's the detail? I mean, you could actually even create a barrel with the 3D print, the entire freaking gun with moving parts.
Yeah, what excites me is, especially when, and I don't know if you're going to do it with stereolithography and metal powder printing, maybe you will, but whatever the technology is going to be that can also print circuitry, you know, and print metal and print electronic and semi-organic components, this technology, man, you know, not only can it print the printer, which is one of the more exciting ideas for me, right? So it takes the printers literally out of the standard production chain. But also, look, you get not just traditional guns, but you get DIY electronics. I mean, you get kind of everything, right? And I'm not sure if you're aware, right? You're kind of hobbyist. You know, if you try to get Freescale development boards or really any kind of do-it-yourself PCBs or whatever, these are regulated by the federal government as well. I mean, it's like anything that can potentially be turned into an IED, you know, they've already got encapsulated. I don't think a lot of people are aware of how much is regulated out there.
Oh, no, I know. I do my little battery nanotube making lab thing. And it's amazing what I run up against talking to manufacturers, or how, you know, just by threat, just by, you know, phone call, just by, I tell you how it works, is somebody that makes anything such as the plastic or the parts for your thing or something, all of a sudden they're going to find somebody making a weapon de la whatever, and what do? They go to the company that provided the raw materials and say, hey, we need to see every freaking invoice you have for everybody that ever got anything that we're going to check on whatever. And that right there suppresses who they do business with. And it just, that is exactly how it happens. But your technology just goes planetary. Heck, it even go off planet. Heck, it may need to go off planet as a way of blah, blah, blah. You don't even know. So this is, I'm wondering, how has the media treated you? I mean, what do they think about it?
I think almost without exception, the media has been curious, interested, and willing to ask, you know, willing to go to the difficult, you know, ethical problematic of it. Some are more sensational than others about it, and perhaps everyone's sensational. Perhaps this is simply just a shamelessly sensational story. I don't know. But only every now and then am I seeing a story that's just kind of ridiculous and just a shill for statist interests. Like, oh, now everyone can kill each other because we can print guns. You rarely get that story. Most people are saying, oh, look, you know, these people are really
trying to count. Story doesn't work anymore. I mean, I've heard it all through the 80s and 90s about concealed carry legislation, or them, you know, doing away with gun laws and who can carry what and all that. And then, you know, blood doesn't flow in the streets. In fact, innocent people are more able to defend themselves. You get the statistics on that, and they're like, damn it. But that's not what we want to do. We're the United Nations, and we need to clamp down on the very firearms that you're going to make available to everybody. And United Nations, another reason we need to take over the internet.
Yeah.
So I already see where this goes.
Well, I think right now, taking over the internet is just because, you know, the primary infrastructure of the internet is still in the United States. I think it's just taking over the internet is just another way of trying to do a kind of global redistribution wealth scheme, yeah.
And they're going to be too late, because by the time they do that, we're going to be using satellite technology that Richard Branson put up, or you already bought up a bunch of bankrupt communication satellites to give everybody access anyway, and do UHF Wi-Fi ground cities with 60-mile radius and each city connected whatever, and I put it on my roof and I got bypassed DOD and I don't need them anyway. Okay? So this is, it's just so hopeless what they're trying to do.
Check out the Anarchy Gumbo podcast. Michael W. Dean.
Okay, let's make some notes of some of the things we want to deal with. We talked about the three-year-old thing, the ATF deal, your 501, the cost of the machine. I want to, you know, kind of talk about how much these things cost and, you know, going down in cost, and the ones that you need cost about, and what, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, and then how much money have you raised?
You mean like since the beginning?
Yeah, total. Give an idea.
Yeah. Like 22,000. I mean, not a whole lot,
Oh, I thought you'd already broke, they doubled it or broke 40 or something.
No, man. Boy, I wish, That'll happen soon, though. I got a guy in Sweden that's willing to give us another 10K and some other stuff. We're not taking it yet.
Okay, so 22 so far, get you going. All right. Now, have you had a lot of people come on board want to help with software or already? I bet you they already did it.
Yeah, actually, that's the best thing. I've got guys kind of permanently dedicated to it from around the world. One guy in Thailand is just like, all he does in his spare time is design SNGs, you know. It's just amazing.
You give a distributor, you're going to need to have some place to where the files can be downloaded. Now, of course, when you announce that and you make it, the government's going to track everybody that accesses it, okay? So,
I think we can do magnet links and set up a situation where, you know, it's practically, perhaps use a crypto shell. I mean, honestly, I think we can hide most of the people that download our stuff.
Well, the big thing is that if you don't give them enough time to set up, you just go, okay, here it is now, boom, done. Then they go,
yeah.
We missed it.
I agree. But we want to study it a little bit, you know. We want to definitely make sure that we don't violate the first order federal laws, you know, make them reach for you.
Well, there was a, I don't know if we talked about this before, the PGP story.
Oh, yeah, Zimmerman. You taught me about that. You know, I was telling other people about that after you told me.
Yeah, no, this is just right up with that. I can see, you know.
Another reason we went nonprofit, because the U.S., United States Munitions List, right, because of the Arms Export Control Act, controls information like this. But if you become a nonprofit that publishes in the public interest, you get the exception from the Arms Export Control Act. And you don't have to pay the $2,000 fee.
Export fee. Okay, we'll talk about that. I'll bring up, when we come back, yeah. I'll do a quickie on the Zimmerman thing here.
That's how they got Zimmerman, or tried to, you know, with that law.
Yeah, it was the munitions thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. Creator of PGP, most widely used email encryption software in the world. He's known for his work in voiceover, internet, encryption protocols, notably blah, 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 blah. Background, he was born in New Jersey. His father's concrete mixer, yada, yada. 1991, he wrote a popular, pretty good privacy program and made it available together with source code through public FTP or download, the first widely available program implementing public key cryptography. Shortly thereafter, it became available overseas via the internet. So, have no part in distribution. Encryption algorithm developed by a criminal investigation. All right. Well, give me 60 seconds to read this quick paragraph here, and then we'll go into how that applies to you, and you think it doesn't, and you did what?
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
It's the same old story, same old song and dance, my friend. It's the same old story, same old story, same old
song and dance. Yeah, I've heard this before, okay? Let me tell you where I've heard this before. It was called Phil Zimmerman, all right? Now, this is back in 1991. This is in the early days of the internet, and by the time that they start dragging him through the courts and everything and the media and so on, this is what we found out. And I'm going to explain this real quick, because Cody's going to tell you how he's bypassed a lot of the concerns that this brought up. Okay. In 1991, there's a guy named Zimmerman. He was a professor, okay? He's from New Jersey. His name is Phil Zimmerman. And what he did is he wrote PGP, pretty good protection, pretty good privacy program. It was an encryption of your email, early days. Oh, government didn't like that none too much. Now, the Clinton administration freaked, and what did they do? Here comes Janet Reno. This is back when they wanted the Clipper chip. You know, some of you older guys remember that. They wanted to have where the government had access to every fax you sent or received, and that you got all your email read. Okay, they could, you know, didn't want it. PG, this is like a munition. It's like you know, shipping high tech technology, Soviet video game kind of missile chip stuff. All right, so he saw what was coming. Zimmerman said, no. I see you, Big Bubba's come. No, hell no. And we're going to make this available to everyone. So what he did is he took the source code and everything, and he put it out on an FTP site and downloaded it, uploaded it, whatever, and here it is. So people got this, and they do the public and private key cryptography, and it eventually made it overseas, okay? Now, the criminal investigation, after a report from RSA Data Security, Inc., who were in a licensing dispute with regard to use of the RSA algorithm in PGP. It was like they're going, ouch, quit it, and we're military industrial, and we want to do whatever. What they did is they started a criminal investigation of Zimmerman for violating the Arms Export Control Act. Encryption, ones and zeros for you to protect your email. And this went on for years, and it's a long story, ouch, quit it, back and forth. Finally, after the government dropped its case without indictment in 96, Zimmerman founded PGP Inc. and released an updated version PGP, and it's gone on from then. Now, they went after him. Now, how they went after him is what Cody is worried about, and he thinks he has a solution. Because this is, when we talked before, I brought this up. I go, man, I already tell where this goes. One, it's ones and zeros. Two, they're going to use an, you know, it's a weapon kind of thing. So they'll call it the Arms Export Control Act, which they kind of was, I don't know how they were trying to do that with his encryption. But yours is a freaking gun, okay? So that makes it a lot easier for them to make that case. How are you getting away from it?
Yeah, well, there's two different exceptions that we found for categorization with the United States Munitions List, which is one of the regulatory schedules for enforcing the Arms Export Control Act. One of those, and it's been a while since I've looked at the research, because, you know, we're kind of dealing with, we're juggling a whole lot of balls, but the big thing is, if you're a scientist, a research organization, or a nonprofit organization, don't have to pay what's called your ITAR registration. You don't have to be considered by the State Department one of the regulated entities for purposes of the Arms Export Control Act. That's just kind of the long and short of it. If you're public interest publishing and giving all of the information away under, like, you know, Creative Commons or open source, it's not considered proprietary information in the same way. I know this kind of sounds silly, but honestly, if you're nonprofit, apparently there's a big regulatory loophole there.
Yeah, of course there is. They made a loophole for those that want to do whatever they want to do, and they always get something and hope you don't see it and don't know. And then if they, you know, make it, because I can think of no better reason to not grant you your nonprofit status is that. Because once you get it, you get to do this under their own rules. And they go, oh, yeah, this rule that we made that you got to be this to be able to do that, guess what? You can't do that. Now what?
I don't think the left hand, right? I don't think the State Department, the IRS, are coordinated enough in considering what we are.
Oh, right up until the BATF talks to somebody and Eric Holder gets up and says, uh-huh.
I'm not worried. And that would be almost paying too big of a compliment to us.
I mean,
of course, it's possible. It's possible.
You almost want to pay him to do it.
But the thing is, exactly right, you almost want that kind of collusion. Now, I should announce, though, that Defense Distributed is pursuing 501c3 federal tax exemption, not because we think that's, you know, the morally superior thing to do, but because, you know, if they grant us these exceptions, there's all kinds of easy benefits. Now, Defense Distributed became three different companies, so we're not just limited to being a nonprofit. It's just the publishing house, the publishing side of the operation keeps the Defense Distributed name, and then publishes this IP basically in a tax-exempt way. And we found an old part of the IRS code called the literary purposes section, which is rarely used these days, but actually fits our purposes very well. If you publish for free in the public interest, right, and we call our public interest a kind of, you know, civil right related to Second Amendment-type concerns and what we call the universal human right to ownership of a firearm, if you publish information about those things in the public interest, well, this is determined to be literary purposes for purposes of IRS tax exemption.
You know, I understand the argument, but that's, you know, it's like at the end of broadcast day of, I remember as a kid, you know, actually when, you know, the television station played the Star Spangled Banner and then test pattern, it went off, okay? And, you know, back in the day, it goes like this, broadcasting in the public interest. Well, what the heck does that mean? Well, it's the criteria that they get to get their license, okay? Mm-hmm. And then, what if I am broadcasting not in the public interest? Now what? who decides that?
I don't know. Some tax bureaucrat, but we're going for it. We're throwing the Hail Mary, And I don't think it's that desperate either. I really think there's a strong, at least presidential kind of authority that suggests we would get the exemption. Now, right. If you look at us and go, well, it's guns. They can always stop it, I suppose.
Well, all right, I'll give you an example with the Zimmerman thing. At the time, the boundary between permitted low-strength cryptography and impermissible high-strength cryptography placed PGP well into the too strong to export side. Now, of course, they changed that because, it's just advancements. Well, they're going to be going, what kind of file can you... Okay, you can print that, but only revolvers. Oh, you can't have semi-automatic. Oh, you sure as hell can't do, phaser, weapon, rail, Uber, whatever the hell, okay?
Yeah.
So, and as you were talking about with the advancements and even printing circuitry, that... all of a sudden, you could 3D print your own freaking phaser. And to think that that's not going to happen in, generations or decades or days from now is to be naive. So I'm going, okay, so this is, you're breaking a whole bunch of new ground. How much do you realize that you're breaking that new ground?
Well, I hope a lot. I hope I realize it completely, but I mean, of course, you can't anticipate advancements.
You know what I'm amazed at the most, Cody, is how little opposition you are getting.
Well, let's cross our fingers here.
I'm shocked. I am very shocked that you're not getting. Man, this isn't a campaign issue.
Well, I thought it kind of swirl, out of control and turn into one. And in fact, it really does seem to be good fodder in the next few weeks for some excuse, right, on Capitol Hill to start some new gun control talks. But I hope, really honestly, one of my biggest fears is what some NRA types have expressed, that look, when you do this, you're going to give them a reason to come in harder, to pass these laws that they want to pass, and perhaps people will go along with them because of it. That's a fear that I share.
No, I've been through this before. The NRA, the National Republican Apologist, I got so many NRA stories, and it comes down to this. When they did the Heller versus, in Washington, D.C., they were adamantly against. In fact, in 2001, we had the gentleman that brought that was Bob Levy from Cato. He went back to school to be an attorney, to take on these kinds of cases, talked about it at our Freedom Summit in 01, and they went and looked for this case, found it, went after him, and the NRA, don't do it, because then the judge, they might cite against it or have a ruling against the Second Amendment. I'm like, good. I need to know that. I need to know that. I want to see that. I want them to do it. All right, go ahead. Make my freaking day.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah. Let me tell you who's going up against the wind. Mr. Cody Wilson, he's having the tack. left and right. He'll get to where he's going. It's just, man, he's got some obstacles to avoid or to point out. And we need to have these obstacles pointed out to us. And I'm interested in, just so many things. I mean, there's this fee that you're paying. I mean, how many licenses and fees have you come across, and how much are they to get to the point to where you're kind of, complying with what they say you need to do?
Right. Well, there's all the fees for registering and starting the corporations, and, there's the franchise taxes, and then there was, your federal firearms license, and then your SOT, and, I mean, there's tons of stuff, and when we added it all up and all the expenses related to it, it was almost a third of the budget we had raised online just to kind of get square with the government. State and local, or federal and state.
Well, I know last I checked, it was like $20,000+. Plus you got, a bunch of promises for a bunch more once you get certain, past certain hurdles. So, I mean, is money really an issue to get started now?
No, I think we're still good with the budget. Now, I hate to say that, right? Like, oh, we don't need money. I mean, you always need money, right?
Just out of principle of sending you money.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like, we, and hey, by the way, someone, during the break, someone tweeted me, they showed me that these scientists at the University of Warwick in the United Kingdom have gone ahead and created a touch-sensitive, printable, conductive polymer, which can be used in simple circuits. So, I mean, printable circuitry is already here, you know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah, so it's here. And in fact, we had suggested, and we're still talking to venture capitalists, we had suggested our own design for some conductive polymers that could be printed. So, you know, they and we, and there will be a free market for flex sensors and printable conductive circuitry. That's all coming. You know, and so thankfully there's a nonprofit organization called Defense Distributed that wants to harness this technology, give it away to people in this perceived future where they simply won't be able to encapsulate you legally and to prevent you from making, owning, possessing, and distributing things like this.
It's like passing laws that you can't download Napsters. I mean, you know, I'm just, it doesn't make any difference. Yeah. They'll have some show. They'll go after somebody. You just don't, excuse me. You just don't want to be that somebody. But you know they're just gonna do threaten. You know what they always do? It's threaten, intimidation, and shiny badges and guns. And you're not allowed to duck. So I'm going. All right. So it's gotten to the point now that you see. That's why you know one of the signs that you have up here. It's all over. Okay, because you understand where this goes. And one thing, the picture we have up now is you holding The Law by Frederick Bastiat in one hand and a battle rifle in another one. And that was what was in the U.S. UK Guardian. And I'm going, wow. You know, this you're poking the finger in the eye of somebody, and somebody's got to be made an example of either for good or as you're the target of opposition. I like the way you're a law student too, right?
So you're
trying to, you know, like check off all the boxes here, but have they given you any indication that you're targeted? I mean, they give you any reason to believe that they're going to come after you?
No. Knock on wood, but I mean, no, they haven't. And I think one reason is we've been playing very above the board. We've been honest about everything we want to do and why we want to do it, and that we will play by the rules. Whatever those are.
Oh, but man, you've gone hardcore, too. I mean, you got holding up Frederick Bastiat's The Law.
Oh, I know. Look, I don't shy away from my beliefs, especially that the state, is, especially democratic states, are failure systems meant to just simply enslave and you know, deprive you of your property. I mean, look, I'll go on all day, you know, but I mean, yeah, do I want to stay out of prison and not go before an Article III judge? Yeah, so it's like, you know, you walk the line. I'm not just going to say, hey, screw your laws, and I'm not going to listen to you.
No, this you makes know. You more dangerous, Cody. You understand the law. You're going, okay, we're going to follow your rules. And they go, yeah, well, we just changed them. Okay, well, we'll go to this other rule. Well, we changed that one, too. And in the meantime, the ones and zeros get processed and made available, and the printers keep developing in the quality, and then it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. I hope people can see by now that we're just going to keep marching toward this, you know, inexorable victory. You know, it's not, well, when, you know, when people had seen it, they took the printer away, they went, oh, you know, thank God, like it was over, like that would stop us, you know.
Oh, hell, that's what gave you your boost.
You know, exactly. I hope people see that, like, you know, there is no end to this. You know, this doesn't end with any kind of point. I mean, when they say you can't do it, well, then so what? Who can do it is the question. You know, what organization do we then funnel our time and efforts into? I mean, it's already done in that sense.
And right? What country?
If it's not impossible, it's already done.
What country? I mean, it doesn't have to be the United States. Heck, it could be Lord knows where. You know, it could be out. Okay, think about this. It's a ship production facility 20 miles off the coast of fill in the blank that is sitting there mass producing fill in the blank with their 3D whatevers. You know, now what?
We're with you. I know a contact here in Austin with the Seasteading Institute. That's Peter Thiel's outfit, right? Where they're going to go build kind of Atlas Shrugged style, you know, creative
out on the ocean.
Out on oil rigs, right, yeah. And, of course, the first one to be built is called, I think, what they're calling a technology incubator. I think just for the optics, we should go out there and start printing guns out on this technology incubator just to help the whole, you know, seasteading project. And it would be exactly what you suggest, a kind of extra legal zone where people are just like making technology free of legal constraints.
You know, yeah. I remember in it was a 1960 presidential election, and they had out in international waters a radio transmitted, you know, pirate radio boat like they did in the movie, you know, off the UK. And they were out off Los Angeles, San Diego, I think it was Los Angeles, because the California presidential primary was coming up and they're promoting Kennedy over Nixon. Well, of course, they couldn't do anything until they came into port for supplies and they seized the ship. Okay. So, I mean, this you got to keep in mind throughout history, you know, they make up the rules as they go along. But, you know, that what you're doing is so unique in the fact that it's any. We started following 3D printing, I think it was in 06, when some 15-year-old kid built his own in his mother and father's basement while he was being homeschooled. And I go, he was doing, he made a business of rapid prototyping. And I go, it's all over, man. So I saw this coming long time ago for any and everything. But I did not anticipate that they were going to be able to do conductive stuff. That they're going to be able to, you know, this fast, they're going to be able to actually melt metal powders with lasers and build just about any. It's like you can print your own shoes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're doing that right now.
I know. I'm this is so have you got to play with any of the 3D printers?
Yeah, just a little bit. In fact, on Thursday, I get to play with one again. Not as much as I'd want, of course. I used to have one before they took it away. But, Yeah, I've got to play with them. So jetted photopolymers and these thermoplastics and stuff. I've got to play with the objects and some really higher level stuff. So it's really fascinating.
There's a guy in Thailand that all of a sudden you're his new best friend and he's just developing all kinds of guns.
Yeah. It's really funny how this project, I'm telling you, on every level makes you so many friends. You know, any kind of liberty related people love it. So even if they're into guns, not into guns, it doesn't matter. Whatever if they're good at software, if they're good at hacking, if they're good at gun making, they want to help. You know, it's not even like, oh, hey, I'll pay you. It's like, no, my good man. I will do everything I can for you in this project. This is the coolest thing. You know, the thing just attracts talent and enthusiasm.
Oh, because I can see it represents. What other item would you 3D print that would have this kind of impact? I mean, I can't even think of anything. I mean, what, baby pacifiers? I mean, you know, what are you going to print that's going to be this? I can't think of anything that is empowering of the individual, that bypasses all regulatory controls, that bypasses an entire special interest, bypasses industry, bypasses the military-industrial empire of complex, okay? It bypasses everything. You are one of the biggest threats, and it's not just to industry, it's the way of thinking and looking at the world and what they can and cannot control. And the United Nations thinking they're going to be able to control the internet, whatever the hell that means, you know, is just stupid on its face. It's like, we're going to control the ones and zeros to make firearms. Really? Okay, we'll see how that works out. Cody, go ahead and give out some of your favorite web pages you want people to go to and give you money.
Printablegun.com, defensedistributed.com, 501c3, contribute, tax deductible. Printable guns, baby.
Printablegun.com. Thanks for spending time with us again, Cody. When there's more news, you let us know, okay?
You bet. Pleasure. All right, always.
All right, well, hold on a second. I want to talk to you. We'll be right back with Tom Woods. Oh, you know you want to stick around for that.
If you're looking...
Okay. Yeah, I got a clipping thing going on here. Damn it. All right. One thing that I wanted to make sure we stay up on is the participation of other people and the files that they're producing. If you need a place to put it, let me know.
No, I'm definitely going to let you know, man. If you don't have the AR lower, I would recommend you get that. Put that on your site.
Well, send me where to whatever and do it. We put up CNC files, you know, before for machining. So, what's the difference? But, I would do the same thing again and have all these files. Okay, here are the machining files and here's the 3D printing one. And then if they come after me for one, they'd have to come after for both.
Mm-hmm.
I would think. I mean, just out of, logic, but that don't mean anything.
Well, yeah. Your reason is no good here. Yeah, man. We'll send you the AR lower. That thing's worth having.
All right, cool. Done.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. I think the BBC called while we were on the radio, so you know you have priority over the BBC. Just want to let you know.
Thank you. Now go get BBC'd up, man. Let me know what's up.
Yeah, dude. Hey, take it easy, and thanks for having me on again, man.
You bet. Hey, whenever you got news, man, you're on.
All right. Thanks a lot, bud.
All right, buddy. Bye.
Bye.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, no fear, no fear, no fear. You're undeclared. Your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey! From the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Oh, yeah, go check out freedomsphoenixezine.com. We got this month's edition in the works. It's going to be very, very, very nice. Now, we're talking to Tom Woods this half hour, and TomWoods.com is where you can go to get all the updated latest goodies. And also, he also has LibertyClassroom.com. But TomWoods.com will give him get you access to, you know, Tom's best-selling books. He's a New York Times bestseller a bunch of times. Now, what we want to talk about, in the first hour, we were talking about independence for New Hampshire, the secession thing. And I hear the word nullification a lot. Now, Thomas, you know, help me out. What does nullification, secession, give us a definition of the two words and where we're going with that?
Well, nullification, although today would be viewed as a terrible and extreme remedy, was actually viewed at the time it was proposed as a moderate middle ground between extremes. Nullification is the idea that the states have the power and even the responsibility to prevent the enforcement of unconstitutional federal laws within their borders. And this is a moderate middle ground because it's in between submitting to the federal government and seceding from the United States. So this is the moderate middle ground. Secession, of course, is just simply the withdrawal of some political unit from a larger one. And in the American case, we're usually referring to a state withdrawing from the union. So the nullifying state is trying to stay in the union but hold off laws that the federal government has no right to impose. The seceding state claims that the federal government no longer has any authority over them.
So if you go secede, 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 all of a sudden nullification seems a moderate position.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So that's the function played these days by nullification. You say, look, we're not like those seceders. All we want to do is nullify. Well, all right, maybe it's not so bad. You know, whereas nullification 2 years ago was like, oh my gosh, it's like Godzilla has returned from the movies.
Thomas, I tell you, you know, this has been our role here, certainly in Arizona, and anything that we've had anything to do with. It's always, you know, when they come out with some decriminalization of marijuana a little bit or a little decriminalized, we'll come out against it. That doesn't go far enough. You know, we just make these guys look moderate. We're going, oh, no, you pass and deal with these guys, or you deal with us crazy anarcho-capitalists. We don't want any of your government libertarian kind of time. So,
exactly,
you know,
right.
So I can see the secession movement as being a mind-opening exercise that makes them more understanding of the nullification argument. Now, explain to me how nullification would actually apply on something. You know, give me an example.
Well, there's sort of an example with the medical marijuana stuff that you see going on. I mean, the federal government has not made an exception for medical marijuana. I mean, they've clearly said, the Supreme Court has clearly said, that we can prohibit all kinds of marijuana. We make no exceptions for this. The states have no right to exempt themselves from this, and yet that's exactly what a lot of them are doing. So sometimes it can take the form of what would be, in effect, a kind of civil disobedience sanctioned by the state. In other cases, it can be a more formal declaration by the state legislature, by the governor, by a special state convention, whatever, saying that such and such law violates the Constitution as understood under the 10th Amendment, and so in this state we're not going to allow it to be enforced. It can be done either way. As long as it involves resisting a federal law, I'm a pretty big tent guy. I call all of that nullification.
Okay, let's. It's in the minds of the people. I want to tell this story because I can't tell it enough. I mean, it just really had a big. I want to share this with you and get your comment. Grandparents' Day. Go to my granddaughter's 3-year-old preschool, whatever it's a church preschool. We go there and they want to show, you know, all the, they know their ABCs and whatever. And here it goes. I pledge allegiance to the flag. Okay, at 3 years old. Now, what happened after that is what really surprised me and my wife. We're sitting there videotaping and doing, we're sitting in the little chairs, and I mean, it was on cue. They clicked their heels, and 24 grandparents stood up, Sieg Heil, and they started doing the pledge. And I'm going, wow, this is how you create them, is by starting at 3, okay? Yeah. So this mindset, you know, is what we have to go up with. What we realized through the Levolution and Dr. Paul's campaign and so on is it kind of a generational thing. This generation next, they, you know, 3 months in a Facebook account, all of a sudden they're starting to, you know, read some Thomas Woods and starting to understand that there's something else going on here. Now, I bring this up is because I know you're an active practicing Catholic. And as you have the church and the positions that they take on a lot of things, you would think that, you know, they're looking at, you know, like drug legalization or prostitution or a bunch of this other stuff where the state, they would argue, needs to be there and we got to pledge allegiance and all that kind of stuff. How are you making the argument to your friends and family and your fellow parishioners on these freedom issues?
Well, on something like that, I would say, you know, if I have to place, you know, Bishop so-and-so up against Thomas Aquinas, I think I know which side I'm going to come down on. And it was the opinion of Thomas Aquinas in his treatise on law that you don't criminalize every single activity you might consider to be a vice. The things you criminalize are things that involve harming other people physically. That's what you, but otherwise, because even Aquinas was even willing to say that prostitution ought not to be criminalized because it's, you don't call it the world's oldest profession for nothing. I mean, if some law could get rid of it, this would have been done a long time ago. You're going to cause more problems than you're going to solve. Sometimes you just have to try and engage in persuasion and moral education and whatever, but you don't have to. And so, I mean, you know, and plus, you know, somebody has one moral foible and you're going to ruin his whole life. Is that the only way to go about this? So that's the way I handle it. And also, like the drug thing. I mean, how could prison rape possibly be the most humane way to deal with somebody who has a drug problem? You know, because that is certainly what's going to happen to him, right? So how could that possibly be the humane solution? So that's sort of the way. But also I remind them about there is a Catholic doctrine of subsidiarity, which simply says you don't just automatically decide that some central authority somewhere should deal with some issue. You always start with the most local unit. The most local unit is the family. Let families solve these problems. And if they can't solve them, let the extended family try to solve them. Let their, you know, something local. So that's how I do it. But in terms of the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, the very first event we had, the 10th Amendment Center has been putting on these events called Nullify Now around the country. And the very first one we had, Fort Worth, Texas, huge event, successful, it's great. But we got started, and within minutes of it starting, I've never seen this at any event I've ever been at, but there were a lot of Tea Party people at this thing. Somebody shouted out, why aren't we saying the Pledge of Allegiance?
Because you don't understand why you're here, dummy.
Yeah. I mean, I thought, you're at a nullifying event. And you want to reassure your wise overlords, well, now listen, I want to nullify about it. You know, I'm not going overboard here. I still love to be oppressed and looted and expropriated. It was so bizarre.
Well, in addition,
such a disconnect.
In addition to that, Tom, we were at a Freedom Conference thing, receiving awards, a bunch of the anarcho-capitalist kind of guys in L.A. at a function. And as part of the evening function, they shared the facility with a bunch of Republican precinct committeemen, endorsers of Ron Paul. So you had this big group of precinct committeemen came in that evening. And in addition to the Pledge of Allegiance, an opening prayer. So I have as much, you know, negative waves on it. Fine, it's voluntary, and if you want, you know, whatever. But I see the two always go together. It seems like one is supportive of the other. It's like, you know, the king was blessed by the pope. You know, you have the Church of England. They support each other. When we come back, we're going to talk about what is in the minds of Generation Next. Next, where do they get their support for freedom?
Arizona has been one of the hottest real estate markets in the past, up until the last couple of years. Homes that were once going for $500,000 to $1 million in prestigious areas are now going for less than half of what the original purchase price was. That makes it a very good time to buy. So if you were ever thinking of retiring to Arizona's inviting climate and laid-back and friendly lifestyle, now is the time. That's where I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty, and I have provided a way for you to search for properties that are of interest to you, all at your own convenience and without having to give out any personal information. Visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com to start your search today. And when you're ready to make a move to Arizona's warm and sunny climate, please feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. Many are working hard to make sure Arizona is not only a beautiful place to live, but a free and peaceful one as well. So what are you waiting for? Make your move today by calling 602-828-1819. And don't forget to visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
In the streets, with the children at our feet, you know, Donna and I, we've been doing this 20-something years, and our children were at our feet. Sometimes even sleeping on the sidewalk. It's time to go. Of course, Sarah fell asleep on the sidewalk again. Okay, so this is, you know, been a long-term, long-time battle for a lot of us, and now we have an entire generation next coming up with the understanding of what this is really all about. And I'll tell you, this is a force that the Republican, the GOP, and the they, them, those, and the, every, all of them, they don't know what the heck to do with it. They don't know how to address it. They don't know what to say. They don't know how much they know. They're full of crap. Because the politicians, they don't even understand it. Just, they got 3 points on whatever issue. And if you challenge them, okay, they got a counter to that. But that's it. The second follow-up, the third follow-up, they got nothing. Wow, giving ammunition to Generation Next, guys like TomWoods.com. You need to go over there and find out some of the goodies and read the books and be able to arm yourself with knowledge. But I want to talk with Tom about 2013. Now, we have had some conversations with, you know, people that are in the know, and I include you, of course. What do you see coming?
Well, given that there's no presidential election, it means people's attention will be focused on other things. Now, what are they going to be focused on? Well, you're not going to be able to get rid of Obamacare under these conditions, so the huge Tea Party issue is more or less moot at this point. I mean, the best that the Republicans will be able to do is negotiate trivial changes here and there. So their attention is going to be directed in other places. And maybe they might start having some forbidden thoughts. Now, you and I were talking about secession. Now, that seems impossible right now because you and I talk to people all day who are in favor of secession, but the constituency for secession in America is basically nil. But on the other hand, abolitionism was pretty unpopular, you know, in 1840. Even in the North, I mean, you could be lynched if you were an abolitionist. So there are ideas that have a way of becoming popular over time because people actually sit and think about them for once. And now that you're stuck in this Obama sort of nightmare, which would have been just as bad under Romney, obviously, you know, you have to start thinking, is the system fixable? Could a system like this be fixable? So in other words, you don't have to be an anarcho-capitalist to sit around thinking, maybe the system can't be fixed. So maybe it's a fool's errand to sit around waiting for the next batch of Tea Party senators who are going to roll this thing back. Maybe I shouldn't be a sucker the rest of my life, and maybe I should entertain some of the forbidden thoughts from these people I'm not supposed to be listening to.
And I'm like, yeah, you're still voting. You know, the one thing that I found of interest over the last few years was how rapidly the young people understood and got into the deep, dark truth of the Federal Reserve, the war machine, the empire, the debt. You know, this was, they've been suppressing that for a long time. And I tell you why, because they can. And with the internet, they no longer can. So I'm wondering what's next. I mean, you see in the next year, people are going to be exercising their mind. And what do you think they should come away with? What should they learn?
Well, they should learn that this is not a matter of two parties fighting against each other in a titanic struggle over principle. You know, these are just a couple of tentacles, you know, one tentacle versus the other tentacle, and you're the prey. That's the way you should think about it, that you're being lied to just as much by the Romney people as by the Obama people. You're being lied to by Fox News and MSNBC. So it's time to seek out the truth in unapproved places for a change. Get off that 3x5 card of approved opinion and look elsewhere. I mean, you know, I had a chance to meet Luke Rutkowski a couple of months ago.
We are changed.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I don't agree with them on everything. But the fact is, he has shown one guy with a camera today.
In your face.
Yeah. I mean, these people are cowering in front of this. They're terrified of this. They've never had to deal with ambush journalism or being called out or having a viral YouTube of themselves saying something stupid or sinister. This is something totally new for them, and it's just a guy with a camera, and then these other chapters sprang up spontaneously without even consulting him. I mean, just that one thing inspires me that I can't possibly predict. I would never have predicted that that could happen. So who knows what sorts of things will go on in 2013, but it's not going to be about tax reform and closing loopholes, whatever. I think there are a lot of people who are way past that now.
Well, to what point? I mean, what do you see on the horizon? I mean, all of a sudden, people are just going to be 3D printing their own guns?
Well, I mean, my understanding was that Black Friday set a record for gun purchases, so, you know, you're not far off. So there is that, but it's, you know, in the first Obama term, we were able to get a lot of traction on nullification in Tea Party groups who would never, under George W. Bush, they would never have listened to us. They were very interested then. But now in a second Obama term, maybe they're willing to listen to even more than that.
You know,
I believe in outreach to everybody.
I saw in the 2004 election and in the 2008 presidential election, you know, this anti-war movement thing, because it's a, you know, the, you go high enough on the left side and the right side of the pyramid, you get to the top, it's the same people controlling both sides. And I just see that. I want to know where the anti-war movement went, because that is, I see as a very crystallizing issue that the progressives in support of Kucinich, the libertarians in support of Dr. Paul, to where that can come together. We can worry about all this other domestic kind of, we got to end the empire first. Can we stop killing people? Can we do that one? And I see those kinds of efforts to be squashed by they, them, those. And I'm wondering if you know who they, them, those are. I mean, what do you think the opposition to liberty is? How does it manifest itself?
Well, I think in this case, I mean, I did a book called We Who Dared to Say No to War. It's a compilation of the best anti-war writings from all the American wars, all the contemporary opponents of it. And I did that with a guy on the left just to show, look, we can do this, right? We can come together and say that even though we don't agree on other things, we're against mass murder, and that's a good start for a friendship, and so we did this project together. But in my experience, the libertarians and the, you know, the occasional anti-war conservative are typically quite willing and interested in working with anybody who joins them on the anti-war thing. But I have found overwhelmingly, 90-plus percent of the time, the progressives are just not interested in reciprocating. They want to sit there in their purity and not be tainted by their association with us. And so if this can be brought to work, I would be glad to see this happen, but I think it's actually being sabotaged precisely by the anti-war people who, when they have their big demonstrations, they don't want to have a libertarian speaker. I mean, if they really cared about war, they would want as many people as possible involved.
I saw it happen. I was at Camp Casey with Sheehan, No Ford, in the ditch, covering it for the radio station, Charles' show, and so on. And I'll tell you what happened. Move On and these groups, they use the anti-war to bring together any and everybody they could with a blog, and it was PETA, and it was national health care, and it was any and everything.
Yeah,
we'll use the anti-war movement to get in, and then we'll do all our stuff, and then they totally forgot about the war.
That's it.
But there are people that don't forget, and a lot of them are veterans, and so I see this is going to be a big issue. Tom Woods, you'll give out your favorite website for you.
TomWoods.com and LibertyClassroom.com.
You want to go another segment or you got to go?
Unfortunately, I got to go.
All right. Hey, thanks for coming on, man. Please let me know what major Uber effort we can help with or so on. We kind of, got our future mapped out for us and a bunch of stuff. But, we're looking to make the biggest change that we can. Keep us informed. Maybe we can help.
I appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
All right, thanks for having me. All right. Bye.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello. That's one thing I'm just, what do I got to do? Is there some form I got to fill out? I got to, go to a state legislature and have them do it or put it on the ballot, get petition signatures from everybody else and do. I tell you, one of the laws that changed, Thomas Woods is going to be with us for a half hour today. It's good to get him as long as we did. So thank you, Thomas, for coming on. And he's going to be part of, comes next. I mean, there's you need people out there to make the philosophical argument for whatever, and it's got to be consistent. And I know that a lot of people, they see the momentum. Hey, we can capture this. We can create and label it and give it, shiny badges too, and we can do it in 50 whatever and a website kind of, and then we'll benefit from and usher into whatever. And I have just learned from past experiences that, it's a movement. I'm about movements, not organizations. And so I want to help a lot of different organizations. It helps as a tapestry towards a movement. I'm good. And it's what keeps me in the game. And a lot of people, they come and they go and they come and they go because they try to, support the organization as opposed to the concept behind it. I do my best to, the concept behind it. But, you still got to, make money and so on. That's one thing we're working on. The calendar, I really want to push that. We're going to, it's a good opportunity to support Freedom's Phoenix. And we'll have it up here in the next few days or next week, for Christmas. We can order it and get it done. And we want it to, to ship. And they'll get it about Christmas time or, beginning of the year. Because the first one will start with January 13, and it'll go for like a year and a half, 19 months. Get a value. Now, the reason is because I really enjoy our artwork, and it has a theme behind it. And in because we do different templates, we talk to different printers, we've gone online, we're just going to have to create our own template. And fortunately, with the magazine and everything, Donna knows how to, do it, and we'll work on it and get it all done. And I got the graphic artist helping with some other designs. It'll be very cool. So we encourage you to participate and give us money, but you get something of value for it. Now, I can see in the future where this goes, and I can say it, and it be archived, forever and always, Ernie says, okay, I don't have a problem with that. In fact, You know, when I used to do my show here in the Valley on Terran Radio here, what happened was I would make all these predictions and encourage the audience to make markers in their email calendars, okay? Because what would happen is, you know, Outlook or whatever, Thunderbird or something, you'll get a reminder for something, okay? Ernie said a year ago that this would happen by the whatever, boom, all of a sudden, they forget about it, I forget about it. And then all of a sudden I said, oh, make sure you reference what date, which show, because we archived everything. When I said what, and this is the prediction, you put it on there, it comes up, and you go, oh, and you can call in, you know, whether I'm right or wrong, okay? Call in, that didn't happen, or it did. Now, I can't remember a single time that it didn't happen, at least to some degree, you know, because it's so easy to predict, you know, it's just bad guys being bad, you know, that's just the way they are. So, what kind of prediction can I make for next year? Excuse me. Oh, let's see. Let's do something that, you know, you think it'd be outlandish, you know. But when it happens, you'll go, well, of course. That makes sense. Well, you know, why didn't we see that before? How did you know? How did you not know? Okay. Let's think about it a second. Well, I guess we can pretty much count on there'll be a 3D printed firearm that will be done within the next year. That's not that hard to predict. What will the government do about it? Now, keep in mind, you know, we had something that from blindsided me. I didn't anticipate this, that the United Nations wanted to use an international treaty to make a state, like I think it was Washington, Colorado, that decriminalized marijuana for recreational use. A friend of mine that will remain nameless had never smoked marijuana. And we just didn't have, you know, I didn't want his first time to be where he had to drive or something. We just couldn't, you know, work out the schedule to where he'd just stay over at night. Oh, yeah, I'll try. I go, no. I'm not going to be responsible for your first time doing, you know, marijuana or something like that. And you got to go drive somewhere. Oh, hell no. So we need to, you know, if you're going to be doing that, you know, activity that I might or might not know about. Okay. That, you know, we're going to be responsible about it. But, you know, it was because it was legalized. Hey, it's legal in this state. I guess that moral hurdle is you can overcome it now because the state made it legal. But I'm like, okay, is that what it took? So, you know, some people, that's just the way they are. So the thing that surprised me was that the United Nations would quote an international treaty about drug proliferation or whatever the heck it was, trying to get the Attorney General of the United States to go whip ass on Washington and Colorado. And I'm going, okay, they just, you know, betrayed what their thought process is. Well, we're United Nations. United Nations with a united philosophy and united law and united, you know, we rule you. And we want to demonstrate and go and do. So a lot of people, they go, oh, we can't have that. I go, you know, bring it on. You know, bring it on, bring it on. In the Heller case, you know, Bob Levy came, it was Bob Levy. I was trying to remember his name before. Bob Levy from Cato spoke at our first Freedom Summit in 2001, along with a lot of other great names. And what happened was he was talking about other lawsuits on tobacco industry and lawsuits, antitrust things on, you know, Microsoft and is going. So there was an interesting conversation. And from that, we were also talking about, you know, challenging the government's view on the Second Amendment. Well, he became the one that wanted to push the Heller case on can you have a firearm when the city says you can't. Now, who is the most against filing such a lawsuit? The N-freaking-R-A, all right? The National Republican Apologists, the people that need gun control so they can have something to bitch about. And in Arizona, one of these days, I'm going to give you chapter and verse and all the crap I had to put up with the NRA. We created SAFE, Second Amendment is for Everyone, as a counter to the NRA gun control. You guys want to play? They would have, you know, Charlton Heston and G. Gordon Liddy at an NRA fundraising banquet after they gave an A-plus rating to John Kyle run for U.S. Senate after he voted for the crime bill and the assault weapon ban. A-plus rating. So what do? We have a plane pulling a banner around the... It said, welcome to the Gun Banner Barbecue. And as people were going in, we're taking pictures of everybody. I mean, we're just, Oh, don't. Because, man, oh, here we come. So anytime there's any kind of... And then I find out, it was another issue entirely. It was... I got to tell you this story. I got like a minute for the break. The Arizona Cardinal Stadium, they wanted to build in Glendale. And there's some interest that wanted it built in the East Valley. Or they didn't want the East Valley, went in the West Valley, whatever. They were, you know, we were against it being built with taxpayer money anyway. They came to us, big lobbyists. They take us in, tell us how the world really works and we can be part of and money and this and that and buddies and you have influence and we can all be friends and, you know, just do what we say and the way we say and give money to be saying. I'm like, no. And they explained it to, hey, man. You know, this is how we roll. And they explained what they did for Monster.com. He was a big anti-gun guy. They did introduce legislation just to get it to pass a committee so they could convince the NRA that they needed to hire them to be against the gun control that they just introduced. Because the NRA said, we don't go to Arizona. We don't worry about Arizona. We don't deal with Arizona. Because what they didn't know is that we saw the NRA as compromising pieces of crap, and we just beat them out. Get out of here, you compromisers. You see? So they intimated to me, oh, this is how it works. We create legislation so we can be against it. Well, they were already doing that before.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Declare your independence. Okay. This Saturday, the Arizona Breakfast Club, we're going to have some representatives from C4L. We're going to have the Young Americans for Liberty Student Freedom Group, ASU. We're going to have some local activists doing what... Oh, and we have a... Next week is a big activist kind of fundraiser for 4409 and friends. You know, they need to start raising money for all of their stuff to give to Mark J. Victor for representing them on everything. We need to do a fundraiser. Mark's like, hey, man, you know, crap. You guys need to fork over some cash. So, but he always likes helping these guys. It's just, I mean, you know, he's a big, big, big badass attorney. You know, we were going to have him on. We scheduled him for next Friday through a schedule. And he goes, no. I can't do the show then. Why? Because they're going to be reading the Elizabeth Johnson sentencing. They're going to be doing it. So you need to be available for international press on that one. So, and then we have the baseline killer thing that he's representing families where the city of Phoenix really jacked them up. I tell you, in a nutshell, what happened there. There was a serial killer that was going around for weeks, months, you know, 8-9 people killed. But in the beginning, he didn't kill these first two girls that he sexually assaulted, and they just didn't do extensive DNA testing. The detectives are screaming, test these. We know these are related. You know, they wouldn't do it because they did a big giant bond thing, raised tens of millions. I think it was like $40 million or something to build this lab. Well, of course, they want the results to come out of that lab. Well, they didn't have. They just wanted to go get more evidence. They wanted to solve it. Had to solve it with their gazillion-dollar lab. Well, if they just walked down the street to the Department of Public Safety, you know, the Arizona State Highway Patrol, you know, they had a state lab. They had. Now, how do we know this? Well, you know, a bunch of detectives came clean on that. And, you know, Pal Gamble, a senior editor of Freedom's Phoenix and a 5-time running for Congress kind of guy, was head of the bioterrorist crime lab at the Arizona Department of Health. This guy knows, you know, Pal, man, he's, you know, that's what he did for a living. So he's like, you know, yeah, we got this stuff. Well, they didn't go down and do it. Well, then finally they did. After enough, finally had to come to where the police union representing the detective had to scream at the politicians, you know, the mayor and the chief of police. No, it had to come out of there. People died. And they don't care. That wasn't their goal. It was, you know, they loved having, ooh, everybody's afraid. Ooh, that works for us. Ooh, we need a bigger budget. We need more money. We need more. We need more. And then it all came out that was politics got these people killed. So wrongful death. Who represents the families? Mark J. Victor. So what did we do? All the evidence, all the PDFs, all the stuff. Don Freeman's Phoenix. We created an own category. It's called the Phoenix Baseline Killer. You go to that category and it has all the stuff there, all the PDFs, all the testimony, all the documents, all the discovery. We just put it up there. Well, that's getting ready to go to trial. I think it's this next spring. You know, that happened. All of a sudden, the media is all over him on that one. And he just got done with this Liz Johnson baby Gabriel thing, got not guilty on the kidnapping there. Why? Because the government does the same thing that they always do. They screw up. They charge with the wrong crime. They do things for political reasons. They want a big show, how tough they are. They don't really care about the law or the harmed people or, you know, justice or anything. No. You know, and that's one thing that prosecutor Mark points out, is that prosecutors have a duty to serve justice. Well, that means, you know, if you got exculpatory evidence, you know, that would clear the defendant, you go, yeah, here. No, they hide that stuff all the time. If it doesn't support, you know, the conviction rate, you know, it doesn't get included. If it helps the state, boom, yeah, you know, whatever. Bring it in. So I have Will Grigg. Donna's trying to get hold of him and have him come on because he's been doing a lot, you know, good and bad articles, and we want to talk about that. I try and accentuate the positive and work with these guys, but my Friday? Oh, Will Grigg's going to come on Friday. Yay. So the one thing that I try and work with local government, you know, the legislators or someone, you know, we have cordial relationships with, my police contacts, they're getting kind of strained. You can tell in their voice. They don't, we don't want to talk to you as much as we did before, Ernie, because every time we do, we get in trouble. And the reason is because, you know, we're just trying, we don't ask permission. We just tell them what we're going to do. Okay, we're going to do this. Well, that'll like make us look bad. Yeah. You want to look worse? You know, I mean, how do you want to deal with this issue? So you got to support our right to complain, at least. Or not. You know, either way, we win. You know, educate the people. But sooner or later, they just get tired of it, and they just make up stuff. I see it all the time. All the time. All the time. All the time. All right. Let's go ahead and look at some of those stories within the show with a bunch of, you know, news things that we should go over. All right. What's this one? The death of Marine Colonel Jim Sabot. This got a lot. You know, I checked the traffic, what stories are popular and everything. This really jumped up there. So I went and looked at it. I'm like, now, what the heck is this about? He was a Harrier pilot and third in command at El Toro, you know, the base in California. And he wasn't going to allow the illegal drug running to keep taking place on his base. Oh, that'll make you unpopular. Go check that story out. I found that of interest. Tax cut to benefit over 900,000 enterprises. They're doing a tax cut. About 710,000 enterprises have been covered by the tax cutting program, and another 200,000 will be included starting December 1st this year, according to the meeting jointly held by the Ministry of Finance and the State Administration of Taxation in Shanghai. Oh, so China's cutting taxes. Yeah, well, where'd they learn that from? Not U.S. So China, you got the financial problem. What do? They cut taxes. Oh, Jeb Bush meets with former aides near White House. Okay, so Jeb Bush. Seriously? Daddy Bush, Baby Bush, and Bubba Bush? You know, I mean, you know, I'm wow. You know, if we allow that to happen, yeah, we deserve it to happen. Oh, and here we go. Christmas party at the Hancock. Saturday, December 8th, 6:30 p.m. until. All right? And, you know, we have good parties, you know. And the only thing is that you're just not allowed to be a butthead or annoying. Because I say. You know, and it's usually, you know, we don't have a problem. So it's always been fun and a little revelry. But be responsible because I'm not your babysitter, okay? But you know, we always have a good time, good Christmas parties, and, you know, Donna gets the place lit up, and I got to do some work. All right, here we go. All right, and here's another story. Oh, I saw this. This is good. Study. Porn stars more religious have higher self-esteem than other women. Why? I don't know. Go read the story. I thought it was interesting. made you look. Bloomberg vaguely threatens landlords who don't get the lights back on. All right. Here's the solution, okay, to Hurricane Sandy. A government mandate. You must get it rebuilt, redone, redo, get out there and do and shovel and kind of make and turn and flip it on because I passed a law. Wow. Okay. All right. Well, if they think that's how they roll. Egyptians challenge mercy in nationwide protest. Now, this is become Tahrir Square is just filling up again. Police fired tear gas of stone throwing used in the streets near the main protest in Cairo's Tahrir Square. Blah, blah, blah. It's all starting all over again. And here we go. Egypt meeting fails. Mercy maintains unchecked power. Or Mursi, or however you say it, M-U-R-S-I. A five-hour negotiation between Egyptian President Mohamed Mursi and the nation's top judges has failed. Nation's top judges, well, they represent the opposition or whatever. Well, they can just be replaced. Yep. Pharaoh number 5 billion and whatever. Okay, here we go. What the future will look like, according to famous science fiction, what they did, this is an interesting chart. What they did is they took popular science fiction novels and it said, okay, it was written in this year and it predicted this in this year. So it's 2153, they predicted whatever. So they're going, and what they predict, a lot of this stuff, especially the older science fiction, has already happened. Okay, that's cool. Like, Samsung thinks it'll release flexible LED displays next year. Now, we've been talking about this. You can just, roll it out. It's like a tube screen. You just roll it out and it becomes a keyboard and a monitor and everything all in one just big roll of screen. All right. That's high tech. The Highway Patrol cop of the future is a robotic unicycle. And all of a sudden, it's like a cartoon out of the Jetsons. You can come up and give you a ticket. Okay. Oh, the sunspot's going crazy. Oh, it's a global warming. You ever think it might be the sun? Ever cross your mind? All right. Pentagon, a human will always decide when a robot kills you. Well, we got that going for us.